the physical traits matter a ton, but they matter because they have to be backed up by the tape. As long as they're backed up by the tape, good. If they're not backed up by the tape, good. That's another factor.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zur 188. Folge vom Cover2 Podcast. Mein Name ist Luca und schon wieder ist Simon nicht bei mir. Es scheint Gewohnheit zu werden, wenn wir Gäste hatten. Nein, Simon war in der Folge mit Andre Simoni dabei und wir haben mit ihm ja unsere Serie fortgesetzt über Tackle, Inside O-Line und Running Backs gesprochen. Sehr, sehr coole Folge, immer wieder eine absolute Freude, Andre dabei zu haben. Und ja, wir wünschen euch viel Spaß damit. Vielleicht noch als kleiner Hinweis, weil ich es letzte Woche vergessen habe. Checkt aus cover2-shop.de. Ja, wir sind kurz davor, unseren ersten Meilenstein an Bestellungen zu knacken. Von daher schaut mal rein und jetzt viel Spaß mit der Folge. So, today we are joined, like every year when it's draft time, by Mr. Andre Simoni of DNVR. Andre, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Yeah, it really is our annual tradition. I'm glad we could do this. I thank you for being flexible with my schedule. I know I had to reschedule. I'd never been on a cooking or food show before, so you know, you guys allowed me to experience a big one with that. So I really appreciate your flexibility.
What did you make?
No, not I didn't. I just ate for free. So and I don't think I'll even end up on camera. But it was still enjoyable. Yes,
Simon is here as well, and we want to talk to you about this year's draft, of course. But we also want to focus on running backs and the O-line men today, because those are two of the four position groups we are currently missing in our previous series.
Nice.
Starting off with, of course, quarterbacks, always one of the biggest topics, yeah. Always the biggest topic when we talk about the draft, especially this year with all those different high-rated prospects. Who is your clear number two, I guess we have to say, because number one's consensus same.
Yes, agreed. And it is for me as well. Yeah, it's Trevor Lawrence at number one. Yeah, it's not clear. There is no clear number two, but I think by just an inch, Zach Wilson gets the edge over Justin Fields. I think you're looking at both as pretty unique talents, both athletically and as far as arm talent. I think Fields the better athlete, certainly for his size. Wilson, I think, the better arm. And also the fact that, you know, at least both have started for over 2 years at the college level gives those two an edge over Trey Lance. There are certainly some concerns with Fields on the processing side and that kind of stuff, a concern that I think Trey Lance has as well. But there are also similar concerns that guys like Deshaun Watson or Justin Herbert had coming in, and we've seen how much they've cleaned up, not to mention, you know, a guy like Josh Allen, who was on a whole other level of having to clean things up. Well, Zach Wilson is more that modern, new age quarterback. He can throw it midair, 60 yards, really good off script, really good at making kind of a play happen out of nothing. But you wonder how much, you know, no one elevated their draft stock more than Zach Wilson this year. And it's because BYU probably saw their schedule changed more than any other team. You know, BYU almost always is playing Utah. They're playing USC. They're playing Notre Dame. BYU is an independent, but they play like a Power 5 schedule. This year, they didn't play a Power 5 schedule. And all of a sudden, they were beating up on teams. They were undefeated for a while. So you wonder how much is Zach Wilson aided by that. And yeah, Trey Lance is a really hard evaluation, and Mac Jones to a similar extent is a very hard evaluation. You know, no one, two guys coming from dominant programs, two guys who only have 1 year on tape, and two guys who are greatly aided by their systems, and we'll have to make some pretty massive adjustments as they come into the NFL. So it's a really interesting class at the top, and that's how I have them ranked. Yeah.
Yeah, those five you've told us in this order are your rankings as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Little off for Mac Jones at the end there.
Yeah, exactly. He'll carry a similar grade to what Baker Mayfield carried, what Mitchell Trubisky carried. Gosh, who am I blanking on? He'll be right in the range of a Jared Goff. Right with the Dwayne Haskins, you know, so it's, yeah.
Yeah, that's always an exciting question. Where would you rank that or those players in past quarterback classes?
Lawrence is one of the few elite grades I've ever given to a quarterback.
Do you have another one in mind?
I'm trying to think back.
Blake Bortles.
Blake Bortles carried a pretty high grade. Luckily, not elite. thank God for that. But I honestly think he's the only ever elite grade I've given out. I've been doing this since after the Andrew Luck RG3 draft. So that first draft I did was the worst quarterback draft I'll ever study. EJ Manuel, Geno Smith, Matt Barkley was my top rated guy. I think I was actually proven right on that. But he carried a third round grade for me. And then top 10 talents, which is like top 10 at their position. Basically, I'm saying these players will never hit free agency. Their first two contracts, they'll just be franchised. That's where Zach Wilson and Justin Fields fall. I definitely gave out that grade to Jared Goff, who I really liked. I definitely gave that grade out to Sam Darnold, who I really liked, to Josh Rosen as well. I'm wondering, I feel like there's one massive quarterback class that I'm blanking on here.
Kyler,
yep. Kyler had he carried a top 10 grade as well. Yeah. And then I have a first round grade for a guy like Trey Lance. I'm trying to think back to what other first round grades I gave out. A lot fall in the range of late first, early second, which is like Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, on top of Baker Mayfield and some of the other guys I mentioned earlier, carried that kind of grade. Mac Jones is also in that range.
Okay.
So, as I mentioned, Mitchell Trubisky, those kind of guys. Deshaun Watson, I gave a first-round grade to, so he's right there with Trey Lance, for example.
And when we talk about Mac Jones...
Simon is already excited.
I'm super excited. I guess my fantasy team name is already Mac Jones on 3 is a steal. But one question, you mentioned it before we started recording. Obviously, we were on the same page when saying Mac Jones or to draft Mac Jones on 3, maybe a bit too high for his value. But what's your take on a GM or the coaches of a franchise to pick their guy if they think Mac Jones is the best guy for their franchise for the upcoming years? Do you, when you think he is a guy, would you be okay with it if you draft him way overvalued?
Yeah, so I think while you are giving up draft capital, the hope is that you'll at least have a 2 to 3 year window where you don't have Jimmy Garoppolo on the books and you only have a rookie quarterback on the books, plus, you know, a veteran who you're paying whatever an adequate salary is for your veteran. And that could give you a huge advantage in free agency. And I think that's the other side of the coin. The other part of this is, while the value for us studying this year round might not be good, ultimately NFL decision makers aren't scouts. They are general managers. They are often coaches, as is the case with the 49ers here. And so they have a completely fresh perspective. You know, and I think we got to take that into account. As much as we may not agree with it, I think there is some value to a mind like Kyle Shanahan turning on the tape, seeing what Justin Fields did last year and seeing what Mac Jones did this year, and thinking, wow, Mac Jones is actually more NFL ready. He's more accurate. I might like his deep ball more because maybe he doesn't have the raw strength to be running, you know, right and then flip his hips and throw it 25 yards left. But he can, you know, he's got, we've always said about Mac Jones, great deep ball accuracy. It's the best trait he has. So, you know, some people think of arm strength as what Josh Allen or Mahomes can be. Others people think of arm strength as being able to complete deep balls at a high percentage. And he can do that second thing. So, you know, I think there that's the case to be made for Mac Jones in some ways. Is encouraging when you go get your guy in the NFL. You have to go get your guy at the quarterback position. That's been proven through the last few years that quarterbacks don't just drop in your lap. You have to make a move up. And I think that the value in the NFL for Mac Jones might be completely flipped from what the value of that media see in them. You know, we might all be ready to adjust and say you need a mobile quarterback now to win in the modern NFL. I don't think everyone's ready to accept that, especially a play caller that just a couple years ago should have won the Super Bowl with Matt Ryan, you know, and had that was one of the 10 most prolific offenses of all time. And you can find it on YouTube. There's a Coach Sarkisian, the offensive coordinator for Alabama and now new head coach for Texas. He was also the offensive coordinator for the Atlanta Falcons, of course. You can see in that very coaching clinic, he's flipping back and forth from play calls he had Matt Ryan do at Alabama and play Atlanta and play calls he had Mac Jones do at Alabama. And I think that's to a large extent what Kyle Shanahan is thinking. He's trying to reproduce that record-breaking offense that they had with the Falcons, and he thinks that if he can do that with a guy getting paid just rookie money, they might have a 2-3 year championship win.
One thing when I prepared for this year's draft and I looked over the quarterback prospects, the normal strengths and weaknesses for each prospect you go through, when I went through the strengths for Mac Jones, I think just every strength of him adapts perfectly to what the 49ers are playing. Maybe you talked about, okay, he's very good on deep throws, but he really doesn't miss on underneath routes, which is the way the 49ers are playing with all their yak guys on the roster, on the wide receiver and tight end position. Very calm in the pocket, very quick. That's what Garoppolo has done the past years, one of the quickest passers in the league. But when you had to give your take right now, do you think the 49ers really draft Mac Jones? Or do you think what media is saying, I don't think so?
It's not based off what I'm hearing. It's not based off, you know, but when you hear things like Adam Schefter say with the utmost like certainty, like it was a week old news that, yeah, they're going to draft Mac Jones. Or you read Peter King,
Chris Sims.
Yeah, right. Or even Daniel Jeremiah and how much they're hearing. The guys who their sources aren't anonymous scouts, their sources are general managers and head coaches, seem pretty certain that it's going to be Mac Jones. So I kind of have to trust them. But I know there is massive skepticism, and it goes beyond the media. I think it really is skepticism within the scouting community in the NFL itself. The people that have been doing this year round and had Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields penciled in, and even Trey Lance penciled in as the top three quarterbacks for like 15 months, I think they strongly disagree, but they're not the decision makers.
That's why we love draft time.
Absolutely.
Let's get a few more in here concerning quarterbacks. We always glance over Trevor Lawrence because he's set as the number one overall pick. He is the greatest prospect this year, as you've already told us. But what is it that makes Trevor Lawrence so incredibly great for, maybe every team? For me, when I look at him, it's just his incredibly high floor. You don't have the risk, I'd say, that he'll he'll have bust potential, like maybe a Josh Rosen. Do you agree with that, or what is the main aspect for you Trevor Lawrence brings to the table?
I mean, I think that's a good way to put it. He's your, what makes an elite prospect is their high floor, high, incredibly high ceiling players. And yeah, his raw tools, his mobility, his arm strength, the fact that he's had a NFL ready frame since he was 18, you know, he could still put on some weight, but the bare bones to put that weight on are all there, you know? And he can just make special throws that you, things you can't teach. And while, yeah, he, some of the more refined areas of his game might struggle early on, you're right. That's what's going to allow him to succeed early, is that he'll, when he doesn't read something, he can get out the pocket and he can just sling it and make plays that way. And then, you know, if he ever puts it all together between the years and becomes a little quicker in his processing, and more advanced in his reads, and even, you know, his mechanics and accuracy, the sky's absolutely the limit. And, you know, we've seen him do it at the highest level. We've seen him do it consistently for many years. There just isn't a, in a year like this, you have very few safe prospects like that, especially at a premium position.
And apart from the top five guys, do you think there is potential for maybe Jamie Newman or someone else to have the potential to get into an NFL starting role, or maybe even establish themselves as a backup this year?
Yeah, I wouldn't underestimate Kyle Trask, who I think, you know, everyone's going to hate because his raw tools are not great. But man, the guy just gets it done, even if he's not mobile, even if his footwork isn't great. I don't love his mechanics even. He's a guy who under pressure could succeed. And in the right offense, given the right situation, I think he could be a valuable backup. There's lots of hype around Davis Mills, who really struggled at Stanford last year, but shows some encouraging stuff as kind of a, you know, spread gunslinger. The kind of West Coast guy who's got some mobility to him, almost a Jimmy Garoppolo-esque kind of player. Hard to know. He's played so little in college. Newman, to me, is a tough eval. Very Jacoby Brissett-esque. Tools to make an NFL roster are all there. But, you know, off his second reads and what have you, I really worry. I worry that he doesn't use his athleticism. Kellen Mond has all the traits and does similar stuff. I really like Brady White out of Memphis. I think that's a name that people should kind of keep
in mind. What about Philippe Franks? I've already met some Philippe Franks truthers who are in love with his arm.
Yeah.
What's your take on him?
That's the draft for you. That's the draft. We can still fall in love with these high-end recruits, with these guys who have all the tools. Philippe Franks has all the tools. Jeff Driscoll has all the tools. You can look at, you know, I say Driscoll because he reminds me a lot of Philippe Franks. I mean, a lot. Former very high recruits go to Florida, can never figure it out, then transfers to Louisiana Tech, shows the slightest of improvements, gets drafted, and because of his tools is still on NFL rosters but can't really do anything with those tools. Philippe Franks, you just need to look at what he did at Florida. Look at how dynamic that offense was as soon as they made a quarterback change. I mean, the moment they made a quarterback change, it was night and day. And with him, they couldn't do that. He's a great athlete. He's a good thrower, but he's not a passer. He's not a quarterback. And so... yeah, I don't know. I think he might become like that Cardinals, the former Virginia Tech quarterback who's a tight end now. I'm blanking on his name. Thomas?
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't matter. but, you know, that kind of super raw quarterback prospect. Yeah.
Okay, then let's finish off this mandatory quarterback talk. I get into some general takes on this year's draft. It's kind of a unique situation with all the opt-outs last year. And we've seen all those pro day, especially 40 times this year, which were incredibly fast.
Yeah.
Do you think it's an advantage for those guys? We asked this question, Austin Gale, a few weeks ago. Like, those players who opted out have to get from zero, like they trained and
and stuff. That's given. But they have to get from zero to maybe, instead of 100, they have to get to 200, because the NFL, with a completely another game speed, they are true professionals right now. Do you think it's a big disadvantage for them this year?
It's going to be really interesting to see. Yeah, it can't not be a big disadvantage for some of these opt-outs who we haven't seen play football for over a year. And you wonder how much football training have they been doing and how much training for the pro day have they been doing, right? Because it doesn't totally translate. So yeah, I think it'll be big. The big thing from this whole cycle is how much the poor pro day performances are going to hurt these prospects. We have so many prospects this year. You have one chance to get it right. It's not on an equal footing. And there are some guys who would have been top 100 picks who are just going to be undrafted. Maybe might not even get a shot because their pro days were so bad. You know, like all of Pittsburgh had a bad pro day. Like how
bad weather that day.
Yeah, and that was their shot. You know, there's a guy like Paris Ford who stopped playing midway through the season, who was looking like an extraordinary safety. Kind of the modern versatile nickel safety everyone's looking for. And then he has like historically horrible pro day. Yeah, he's not getting drafted. I don't know how many shots he'll get in the NFL. So it's a very...
You think he'll go undrafted?
Yeah, I don't.
I have to get his...
After that showing, there are old linemen who performed better, Luca.
What was that? That's 4.8340 time.
Yeah.
28 vertical, 9.2 broad.
Yeah.
7.7443 goal as a safety.
Yeah, no, yes. I mean
4.8.
I swear there are offensive tackles in this class that outperformed in every single category.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's insane.
Yeah.
But is that only for those mid-tier guys, or do you even take that into consideration talking about someone like, for example, Penny Sewell, who we'll get into later in the episode? But are there prospects where you say they are kind of untouchable in that regard because they are so good?
We're going to find out. We're going to find out. I think Penny Sewell, Gregory Russo are going to be very interesting test cases because, yeah, I don't think Jamar Chase is going to be hurt by it. In the end, I don't think Trey Lance will be hurt by it too much. I don't think Rashawn Slater will be hurt by it too much. But yeah, it kind of is that next tier of guys who we're going to see. And I mean, I think it's going to be a very case-by-case basis. Some guys will be helped by it. Some guys will be hurt by it. There might not be much of a rhyme or reason. It's going to come down to like the strengths of the class, kind of the question marks that the others in your class have, where you might have gained an advantage. Yeah, but it's going to be unpredictable for sure. And I think it's building up to make for the most unpredictable draft cycle in the history of the NFL draft next year. I fully expect like 2022 preseason rankings to be obsolete by week 3 of the college football season. Because we know nothing right now. We know nothing. Yeah. We haven't seen these guys against the top competition. We know very little about this incoming junior class. It's going to be really interesting.
We've talked about players who might not be affected, not combine, but pro day stats. One player I've heard about the last days was Rashad Bateman, who weighed in for, I think, 190. Do you think that might be a problem for him, that he might drop really late into the first round instead of maybe the upside he had in the last few weeks going a bit early?
I don't think a factor like that's going to weigh too heavily. You know, there's a guy like Christian Darrisaw that didn't do any of the testing in his pro days. There's some guys who weren't healthy and couldn't do it, like Wyatt Davis and stuff. Those cases, though, in some ways it's almost better because it forces you to just watch the tape and do your evaluation solely based on that. you know, and then you get the medical and what have you. The size is going to be interesting, and we'll get into that with a lot of these offensive linemen, because a lot of these guys tested well, but then they don't have the arm length. I mean, I think there's like four guys who have the appropriate arm lengths to play tackle in the NFL. That's okay. Big. That's big.
Let's all share our top seven guys. Okay. Maybe you first, Andre, and then Simon and I go off of that. And then we'll talk about the most interesting guys of those top seven. And later we'll get to the top three. Maybe they're similar. And we'll go in depth on those guys for sure. Do you want to start with running backs or with offensive linemen?
Whatever you guys prefer.
Simon, you're the decider right now.
Then we go with running backs here.
Okay.
Okay.
The most important position in the draft.
That's a great great point, because what are your takes on the running back topic? Is it okay to take a running back late in the first round or even the first round, or are you more in that area of running backs have to be soonest as possible, is the 33 overall pick?
I think there are certain positions, and running back is probably the biggest example of this, where it's been proven that starter level talent can be found late in the draft. That doesn't change the fact that there have also been plenty of Hall of Fame talents been found early in the draft at the running back position. And I think it's clear that the differentiator for taking a running back early in the modern NFL is being able to impact the game as a pass catcher as well. It's why Zeke Elliott, Alvin Kamara, who wasn't that high of a pick, or Christian McCaffrey have really shown that they were worth a top 10 pick. Other running backs like a Leonard Fournette, who were more dimensional, have yet to return that value. And of course you could say, well, what about Derrick Henry? Derrick Henry is a bit of an outlier in this. So I think, you know, you can justify taking a running back if that's you're in a winning spot and that's one of the last remaining needs for you, and maybe your offense is built around that or what have you. But it doesn't change the fact that you can still find valuable contributors later on, or you can find a couple valuable contributors later on. I think the value all just lies in how dynamic and how many different areas of the game can he create mismatches for you for the running backs. And I think this class at the top, has some interesting guys that can contribute in the passing game.
I'll ask you that again when we talk about offensive linemen, but what are the key elements you pay attention to when you start evaluating running backs?
There are so many different things. I used to really overvalue speed and burst. Shout out to Tevin Coleman. But, there's a million different ways to win as a running back. And so I need to accept that and just evaluate how can you win? How many different areas of your game can you impact in? Obviously, you know, I talked about overrating speed. I think I always underrated power. Power is very important. Contact balance and being able to break tackles is key. That and being able to miss tackles, you know, at its core are the two biggest elements for me, because at its core, again, the bottom line is we're going to draw plays to get you in space. You're going to have one-on-ones against linebackers, safeties, or cornerbacks, and I need you to win those one-on-ones. So if you can break tackles or you can make guys tackles miss, I like that. That's a good start. I love to see vision. Vision and patience are so important. And wrapped into all of that, contact balance, being able to break tackles, being able to miss tackles, vision and patience is balance. Balance is very important. Watch guys' feet. Watch guys how can they pick their feet up? How do they keep their balance when after missing a tackle, after making a cut? These kind of things. Burst. Very important. How much do they just take off once they do make their read, find the hole and decide to go, and then long speed factors into that, and you know, mixed into the top four or five right there with balance is the ability to impact the passing game. And that's, you know, the ability to run routes and catch balls, but also the ability to be a factor as a pass blocker on third down. Because if you're not, you've already told the defensive coordinator, we are going to run a route with our running back because he can't block. That's a problem in football.
How important is the H factor for a running back? Maybe even in comparison to many other position groups in the NFL, and moreover, the usage they had in, or the carries they had to wear in college?
Great question. Yeah, I mean, age, I think, is a factor in all positions. I think it gets overrated a lot, but age is absolutely important. If you're producing at a high level and you've been producing at a high level for a couple years and you're still very young, like say a Tremaine Edmonds was, or like even a Lamar Jackson or Sam Darnold, who I'm still a believer in, that matters. You know, that'll give you, but you don't want to overrate age. Age is not a trait, you know. Age can be like a tiebreaker. But it can't be like the reason to give a prospect a whole, you know, an entire higher grade for me, for example. Durability, usage has to be factored in. Again, more of a tiebreaker for me. How your usage comes is important. It's why I am certainly more likely to be inclined to go with receiving backs, because receiving backs have been proved to have longer careers. Look at a guy like Darren Sproles, you know, or, you know, Austin Ekeler, I think, will have a very long career. Danny Woodhead had a really long career. These specialist receiving backs, they have like 15-year careers. Some of these running backs won't get to their second contract, on the other hand, you know, for a very variety of reasons. So it's all, you know, if I'm getting a battering ram like Ramondre Stevenson, it's built in that his usage is going to be way heavier than the usage of a Demetric Felton out of UCLA, who's almost going to be a slot wide receiver in some ways. And what does factor into my grade, though, Simon, is injuries. Injuries factor in a big amount. Serious injuries certainly factor in more. A history of injuries certainly factors in more. How much you'll be able to contribute early in your career based off injuries factors in a lot. So, you know, I try to tie all that together, factor it in, and an injury and injury history can lower your grade significantly. It could make you an undrafted prospect for me.
Mm-hmm. But it's more the on-field stuff and less the physical traits for running backs.
No, I mean, I think physical traits...
Are there no-goes? Like physical... specific height?
For me, no. I'm a lot of models are designed to kind of, you know, narrow it down to a smaller group, and then just going off that smaller group. I don't like to do that. I'm a guy who I would rather have a model that's more inclusive, so I'm not missing out on the gems like an Austin Ekeler. You know, I want to find that outlier. I pride myself in being able to find that outlier, but a lot of models aim to eliminate. So for me, there is no, you know, history of it, like a Jorney Brown out of Penn State. The guy's retired. So yeah, that will eliminate you. You know, his injuries were so bad, he's retired. Yeah. He would have been a top 100 prospect probably, but his injuries were so bad, poor guy. No. He retired. If your injuries, you know, you have such a bad history, you're not going to be able to contribute right away next year. You're only going to be able to utilize in a certain way where you're really going to beat up and bruised. Yeah, that would be... as far as physical, you know, again, the physical traits matter a ton, but they matter because they have to be backed up by the tape. As long as they're backed up by the tape, good. If they're not backed up by the tape, good. That's another factor. And you can understand why they're not backed up. Maybe it's something that can be coached, and so they have big potential and it's easy to fix. Maybe it's more of an attitude motor thing, and you know, there can be questions related to that. But yeah, there's no one single eliminating factor necessarily for me.
One question I have to ask regarding this, although it doesn't have anything to do with the running backs, this class is, what's your take regarding injuries on Jalen Phillips this year?
I've compared him to the DK Metcalf of edge rushers. Very highly touted recruit in the 99th percentile for physical traits. When he was healthy and has played, he's looked like a superstar. The talent would almost merit a top 10 pick, but would I be surprised if, like DK Metcalf, he dropped to the 60s? Not at all. Bigger problem for Phillips, however, is that it's not the ACL stuff that DK had. It's not the back stuff. It's it's concussions.
Yeah,
it's three concussions already. So the next concussion, always
a retirement because of that.
Exactly.
Already.
Exactly. Tough Borland. You worry about that kind of thing happen. I went back and looked at Sidney Crosby, who I think is the highest profile sports athlete who's dealt with chronic concussion issues. And there was like a 2-year span where he missed 80 games. In the NHL, 80 games means a whole season. And in 2 years, that means a half season combined. So yeah. I think that's when you're drafting Jalen Phillips, you need to ask yourself, could he be missing 20 games in his first 50 games? And are we okay with that? Right.
After one game.
Right. He could also be a one contract player, which is always very scary. But, and in those things, and this is a weird year for me too, because I didn't have access to pro days. I didn't have access to the Senior Bowl. I decided not to go. We didn't have any access to the combine. And you know, front offices are going to have to really rely heavily on their medical staffs.
Yeah. Okay. Then I'd say let's get into it. Please start off us, Andre, with your first 7 prospects.
Yes. To me, there's a clear top 3 here, and just barely. Yeah. Najee Harris is going to be ahead of Travis Etienne, and then Javonte Phillips, Williams. I'm sorry.
I thought we'd go from the back, but okay.
We can do that. We can do that. Yeah. I can do that. Here, let me just count here. Okay, there's 7. All right, going backwards, my 7th is Michael Carter out of North Carolina. Enjoy him. I think he'll have a good use as kind of a second back. Dimitric Felton is my 6th back. I compare him very much to a Curtis Samuels receiving back. Then I have Trey Sermon out of Ohio State, who really dominated that final stretch of the college football season. Very intriguing talent. Then I have Chuba Hubbard, a guy I love out of Oklahoma State.
Oh, okay.
Who I think fits the modern NFL and is being slept on a little bit. I like Luca's reaction. And then the big 3, Javonte Williams, Travis Etienne, and my top back is Najee Harris out of Alabama.
Hey, quite some differences there.
I'm sure. I don't doubt it.
Maybe it was the language barrier. I thought we do the first 7 of the top 10 and then the 3 at the end. But no worries.
Oh, boy. Sorry. Oh, boy, Luca. I can tell you my final 10 if you want.
Yes.
Okay.
Just let us know the last 3 missing.
Khalil Herbert from the top 10. Is my 10th back. Mm-hmm. I have Ramondre Stevenson as my 9th back and Kylan Hill as my 8th back.
Okay, quite similar names when I look at my rankings, but quite different spots, because my number 10 is Ramondre Stevenson, number 9 is Trey Sermon, number 8 is the mentioned Chuba Hubbard, number 7 is Khalil Herbert, number 6 is Dimitric Felton, number 5 is Kenneth Gainwell, and number 4 is Michael Carter.
Yep.
Simon, just at yours before we get into
We are the pretty... pretty on the same page like always. So I'm confused too right now. It's Kylan Hill from the 10, Chris Evans at 9, who I really like, Trey Sermon at 8, and then we go Dimitric Felton, Khalil Herbert, and Kenneth Gainwell. I really like Michael Carter here. I really like him. I couldn't really decide between Kenneth Gainwell and Michael Carter at 4 for me. because I have a third round grade on both of them, because especially Michael Carter, he's a bit small, but I think he's got the tools to be competitive on NFL level.
Yeah,
and that's the main guy for me to target at a later round, except those top three guys for a team that needs a running back but doesn't want a running back to draft in round two.
Is there anyone you say, what are those German guys talking about?
No, not at all. I mean, it's wide open. I actually expected one of us to be way higher on Kenneth Gainwell than me. I like Gainwell. I think there's a ton of upside. He checks off all the boxes, right? So you put him in the right system, you develop him for a couple years, he could be the best back of the bunch. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So incredibly high upside. So I don't know. And you know, like, I don't love where I have Stevenson. You could easily make a case for Kenneth Gainwell over him. I just, prospects like that, I worry, because so much is going to be dependent on how you use them then and how you're developed. And what I've learned is, patience is really important. We need to remember that a lot of these guys won't explode to like their fourth year in the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, that contract year, everyone starts to play real good all of a sudden. You know, and it makes sense. It takes some time to adjust to the NFL and really, really become good. I worry, though, I've been burnt. I've been burnt by guys who you say, well, they check off everything. If the NFL can't develop them, they're idiots. But, you know, sometimes it comes down to you. Like, what can Kenneth Gainwell come to the NFL and do right now that I can trust? Mm. You know, without it being like, oh, yeah, we had a nice, fun play where we spoon-fed him the ball. So that's what worries me. Like, I love Jared Patterson out of Buffalo, and he didn't make my top 10. And he didn't make any of our top 10s. I can see why you like Chris Evans, for example. You know, like, there's a high ceiling. He tested well. There's a high floor, in fact. He's going to be reliable. He just doesn't excite me a ton. I get why you guys like Michael Carter a bunch. Watching more North Carolina recently, I was like, man, that Michael Carter is something else. But, you know, I also, the guys I have in front of them, I think can have more dynamic roles. It might be stupid, but at that size, we've seen some really good backs. Hmm. How many stars have we seen, though? You know, like, how much does this limit him? And I don't know, maybe for the modern NFL, he's just perfect because he has so many of the factors I broke down. But I do have a hard time with Carter, I'll say. He's been a tough one for me to fit. You didn't have, Luca, you didn't have Felton in your top
number six.
Oh, you did.
It was number six.
So, yeah, see.
Because he's one who's really interesting to me. He's a shifty guy everybody's talking about. I've already seen people having him in the wide receiver group and then a lot later down. Where do you see him get drafted? I have a fourth round grade on him right now.
I think he could easily go at the end of the third, but I think his testing was really hurt his stock, which might be fine for one of our teams, might get a really good value, or a team in general might get a really good value out of the Dimitri Felton. Yeah, I love the fact that I think he could be a great slot wide receiver on top of a really dynamic, you know, speed running back for you. I'm not too concerned about the testing numbers because when I go back to the tape, I think that speed plays up. I see him against USC with tons of NFL talent, and he's running away from those guys. So I'm not too concerned, you know.
So that 234 career snaps don't bother you? That we haven't seen as much of him?
For sure. It factors into this. And I mean, that's why, like, my top five, which I shouldn't have said, but I did, those I all think can be like RB1s. 20 carries a game, 25, 30 touches a game can really impact the game in all areas. Then you get to Felton Carter. I think we're more talking about luxurious, dynamic second playmakers in the backfield.
those gadget guys.
Right. Then it's the next wave is like a really nice RB2 in Kylan Hill with potential for more. And I think Stevenson fits that mold. Khalil Herbert fits that mold. I don't think anything stands out to me as too crazy. None of us had Jamar Jefferson, huh?
No. I have him at 13.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah, that's actually exactly where he is for me. And Elijah Mitchell of Louisiana is a guy I wouldn't sleep on. So there's like 15 guys with draftable grades here who I think will be valuable contributors to NFL backfields.
But I'm also interested in the Chuba Hubbard fascination.
Yeah, no. Vision. Vision is key. Vision is key. Not too many knocks. I get that he feels less dynamic than maybe he did coming into the season a year ago. But I still think that dynamic playmaker is there. I think this is one of those guys where there's a bit of prospect fatigue. But then we'll see him on an NFL field and it's like, oh yeah, he was an NFL ready contributor. He's got the vision. He's got the balance. He's just steady Eddie. You put him on the field, he can contribute in all areas. He'd be great for a zone system, which like now half the NFL is zone blocking anyways. So sounds good to me. So I see a high floor and I think his ceiling's being underestimated as well.
Okay. Then, let's get into
But why do you not like Chuba Hubbard, for example? That to me is the more interesting question.
I guess prospect fatigue is a pretty good word for it because I'm not as hard on the college tapes as you are, but he's a guy I've seen on multiple occasions over the last few years. He's the one when I started evaluating for this year, I directly recognized his name. And I get all the points you say, but there's this the injury bug in 2020. He had some fumble problems in last two seasons. I guess it was seven total.
That's a fair criticism.
And also, that Oklahoma scheme is not as NFL-like as you'd like it to be.
Sure, yeah.
So I don't know how his game will translate over to the NFL, to the pro level, but I get all the points you say, and I believe that all that prospect fatigue may be gone when we see him on the field, like you already said.
He'll be an interesting one for sure. But those are fair criticisms. The injury bug and the system, I think that's very fair. That's very fair.
Yeah. But then let's get into the top three. I have differences to your Andre. You had Najee on at number one,
yep.
Travis Etienne number two, and Javonte Williams number three, right?
Yes.
Then let's hear Simon's.
I just got to mix things up here. I have Harris on three, Etienne on two, and Williams on one, but it's so fucking hard to say which way you got to choose those guys. They are all different kind of backs. So it's interesting how the draft board falls in the first and maybe in the second round and which team may get a shot for their guy. They are completely different players, so it's hard to say, or it's more a sympathy type of decision for myself, which way I go, and that's the way, that's why I picked Javonte Williams on one, because I fucking hate it when a defense misses tackles, and also love it when a running back can make two or three guys miss. That's a game of Javonte Williams, but for me they are all on the pretty same level here.
I think that's pretty good, pretty good point. I also see them all in the same tier. Travis Etienne at one, Javonte Williams at two, and Najee at number three. So I agree there. What is the main factor that you have Najee Harris as your number one running back?
I trust him as an inside runner more than I do Etienne. I trust him as a receiving back. I trust him in space. I think there's enough speed and athleticism there. He's going to be a fine blocker for you. I mean, he's just got such a high floor. I think he's Kareem Hunt without the off-field problems, you know. So, yeah, I that that feels like a pretty safe prospect to me. Etienne, I get the Alvin Kamara comps. I see it. He's definitely the most dynamic of the bunch. But runs a little upright. You know, how is he as an interior runner? How's his vision really outside of that Clemson system? And Williams, it's just a matter of seeing it more consistently, trusting him fully as a receiving back, you know. But boy, the potential is intriguing for both. Williams might be my favorite of the bunch, let's be honest. Yeah. Like, just entertainment level to put on your computer. It's probably Williams all the way. He's awesome.
Yeah, I have the same worries as you said with Etienne, because how will he work without that O-line and without that Clemson system is one of the points. What I really liked is that he got better as a pass catcher this year.
Yes.
And I like those guys where you can see development in areas that I value a lot. And I value pass catching a lot, like you already said. For running backs, maybe he can progress even further. So I see the potential there.
And you're right. I mean, the struggles in evaluating Herbert that you mentioned are not too dissimilar to the struggles in evaluating someone running behind that Clemson line or the Ohio State line or the Alabama line. You know, that's the struggle with evaluating running backs every year from those top programs. Even CJ Verdell from Oregon. Look at the 2019 tape. Every single one of those guys on the offensive line is in the NFL or will be. You know, so that's they're not the easiest evaluations.
Maybe even the hardest.
Yep.
I think running back is always difficult.
Up there, for sure.
Okay. Anyone got any more takes for the running back, or should we move on to interior O-line?
I'll just say, if there's one running back to pick for Simon, San Francisco 49ers, it's Jared Patterson. Jared Patterson, to me, was made for the 49ers, and his numbers at Buffalo are insane. Please, any listeners, go watch yourself some Jared Patterson highlights. If you love football, you will enjoy it thoroughly. You can thank me later.
He loves that outside zone.
Oh, yeah.
Raheem Mostert is 29, so we could use another one.
There you go.
Let's go. I think this will be difficult, difficult exercise as well, because there is some shifting between tackles and interior.
Yep.
But let's not worry about that. Just say our top 10 and we'll get to the main prospects, I think, for sure. Who are your number 10 to number 4 in the interior offensive line class?
At 10... Deonte Brown, left guard out of Alabama. I usually hate left guard prospects and really complain that they should be playing right guard. Deonte Brown is so massive that I love he's playing left guard. It really tells me a lot. Then Quinn Miner out of Wisconsin Whitewater, everyone's favorite athletic center. Then Josh Myers, the center out of Ohio State. Incredible prospect. Wyatt Davis, right guard out of Ohio State. Incredible prospect. Trey Smith, guard out of Tennessee, who would be ranked way higher if not for the injuries. Okay, and now we start to get into guys who could qualify for... I'm leaving my top three as is. We'll talk about it when we get into the tackles as well. So then it's Landon Dickerson and Creed Humphrey are my next two interior offensive line.
I'm quite curious, who do you have?
Yeah, I mean, they would qualify as tackles as well. That's
the problem. Okay.
So I could say, let's say, shit, Luca, I screw this up for you every time. we'll do it in reverse.
No problem, no worries.
Creed Humphrey, Landon Dickerson, they're the top guys. Trey Smith is third. So let's give you the bottom three is actually Aaron Banks out of Notre Dame, Kendrick Green out of Illinois, who I love. And then Ben Cleveland out of Georgia.
Okay, quite low on Ben Cleveland, who's my number 8. I have Aaron Banks at number 10, Deonte Brown at number 9, Ben Cleveland number 8, Trey Smith number 7, Creed Humphreys number 6, Kendrick Green number 5, then Quinton Meinert everyone's favorite, like you said, number four. And yes, that's my players before the top three.
You said Josh Myers, right?
No.
No Josh Myers.
No Josh Myers for me. He's number 11 if I have to have to go there. Simon?
Yes, it's so we go from 10 to 4 here.
Yeah.
And with 10 I start, it's Aaron Banks right behind Josh Myers on 9. So I got him in my top 10. Right here, Kendrick Green I got on 8. And then with Ben Cleveland, Trey Smith, and Creed Humphrey, all pretty much on the same page with a bit of a notch up for Creed Humphrey. And Quinn Minot's for me too on 4.
What am I missing on Josh Myers?
Oh, nothing. I mean, he's 11th. He's like 9th for me.
I just think
he's super solid. You know, he moves well. You'd be hard pressed to find him miss many blocks. Honestly, to me, the guys you're both really missing on is Creed Humphrey. For me, Creed Humphrey carries a first round grade. Yeah, he's my number one.
I remember I watched him against Brevin Roy and Quinn Williams, and I saw that's like maybe the only guys he had really to face with real NFL value. And he had some problems with them, which made me be a little bit more cautious on him.
That's fair. And maybe I love that Oklahoma scheme too much, but this is a, you know, four-year starter in that scheme. You look at the way he moves, it is flawless. There are guys who it looks like he's got that they're about to beat him, and then he just swivels his hips. And next thing you know, he's got the perfect angle block and he's blocked you out. He tested at elite levels. He moves perfectly. And, you know, in the right system, which is a zone blocking system, which again, half the NFL runs that now. To me, that guy's a Hall of Famer.
Okay. Already a Hall of Famer.
I'm saying you put him in the right system, like that's what this career is going to turn out to be. You know, it's a. He was an NFL player as a true freshman. Maybe I'm overrating that. His father played, so you've got the NFL bloodlines. I mean, he's been the center for Baker Mayfield, Kyler Murray, Jalen Hurts, Spencer Rattler. Ran that offense at a high level every single year. I mean,
that's a good point.
You know, and he doesn't have positional versatility. He doesn't have scheme versatility, and he's not going to be the most powerful. But a center, you're going to mostly do double teams, stuff like that. I just think he's going to execute his job at the highest of levels consistently. I think he's if I were to, you know, bet on anyone in this class working out in the NFL, he would be my bet. I think he has the lowest bust potential of any prospect in this class.
I have him as a center, I guess. I have him second, just behind Landon Dickerson, who my number two when we transition into the top three. Yeah. We already heard yours, Simon. What's your top three?
It's Wyatt Davis, Landon Dickerson. And that's a question I wanted to ask you, too. Is Elijah Vera Tucker a guard or a tackle?
Same three for me.
He can be a tackle. He already showed it. But I listed him as a guard here, so it's pretty clear that he's my top guy here.
I think he'll ultimately play guard. It's awesome that he can play left tackle, but 32-inch arms.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I forgot to ask you about elements you're watching when evaluating offensive line prospects. I think it's kind of special with them because there are some, like you already said, some points like arm length, which are essential for certain positions.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is such a unique class, and we're really going to get into it with the tackles, but you have some really, now it with an asterisk, but some really outlier athletes at the offensive line positions. And I've always said, you know, size or athleticism aren't a thing on their own. They're really a divided by equation in the NFL draft. You know, if I have size, that size is going to allow me to make up for a lack of athleticism and vice versa. If I'm athletic, I'm going to be able to make up for some of the lack of size. You can't be non-athletic and have bad size in the NFL. That's just not going to work. So, you know, it's all, you know, a kind of like, well, is Elijah Vera Tucker athletic enough to make up for the lack of length? A question that could be applied to a few other guys. And probably you'll just want him to be a top guard and you'll do that. So, yeah, he would be ahead of Creed Humphrey and Landon Dickerson for me as well. And if Dickerson didn't have the injury stuff, he would be higher than Creed Humphrey for me. So that tells you how much I feel of Dickerson. Dickerson, a guy with like tackle size as well. So rare for an offensive guard, can play center, can play guard. He's an extraordinary prospect. It's just the injury concerns exactly the same as Trey Smith. I mean, I think guys would go top 25 picks if injuries weren't.
Really? For interior O-line? Okay.
I mean, they're as good on tape as the best guards you'll see, the David DeCastros, the Mike Iupatis, those kind of guys who've gone in the top 25 at the position.
Why do you think Quentin Miners is loved by so many people? Is it just because of this Senior Bowl performance and his great character?
Yeah, I mean, it's the Senior Bowl performance, it's the great character, but you guys know this. You have the fever as well. There's nothing better in the sport of football than watching a Division III NFL prospect on the offensive line dominate the communication and business majors he's going up against. I mean, it is spectacular to watch. How can you not love someone? You don't love football if you don't love watching Quinn Miner or any other Division III offensive lineman dominate. Who was I love the tackle last year that was out of Division III, and I'm blanking on his name, but those are just, it's the best, man. So I think that's why the love is.
And so love those stories as well.
Yeah.
Up and comers.
Yeah, exactly. As far as gimmicky, I don't know about gimmicky, but I certainly think in this list that we just made, you can go one by one and say zone block, gap block, zone block, gap block, zone block, gap block, zone block, gap block.
That's true.
Very few who are kind of versatile and fit both. I think it's why I'm so high on Trey Smith. If it wasn't for the injuries, I think you've got positional versatility, you've got size, you've got athleticism, and you actually have system versatility with him. Wyatt Davis, I'm not so sure. Myers maybe could work at center in both systems. You know, the two SEC guys we mentioned, definitely gap block. Kendrick Green, definitely zone block. So yeah,
what's the grade on Smith considering the injury? Where would you take that risk? Which round?
He is firmly in the second round mix for me.
Okay, I have him as a fourth round prospect. He will drop just like.
Oh, I'm sure.
Who was that that defensive tackle from the Raiders a few years ago? Maurice Hurst. The heart issues.
Yep.
I think
could see it. Could
maybe
see it.
Those blood clots will harm him heavily.
Could see it. He, you know, but then again, he pretty solid college career, and you know, clearly, I think a lot of him.
Yeah.
Risk reward for me. The reward is very, very high for him. So I'd be willing to risk a little more. Yeah.
All right. Anything to add to the interior offensive lineman?
No, I think that comes. All right. Keep an eye on Drake Jackson out of Kentucky. Definitely someone not to underestimate.
Yeah, that's we will get at the end of the podcast. We'll get to your deep sleepers.
Oh boy,
the Andre Simone special as always. But let's finish off with the offensive tackles.
Yeah,
the class is incredible. I remember us talking about it even 2 years ago, I think, when you first visited us on the podcast. We already were hyped a little bit about Penny Sewell. Then there are prospects like Rashawn Slater and Christian Darrisaw who are insane. But let's start at the end. Now I spoiled a lot of top prospects.
Fine by me.
Let's start off with number 10 to 4 from you, Andre.
Okay, so I'm going to give you my top 13 because it could be argued that three of these guys should be in the guard off in the interior category, but we haven't talked about them yet, aside from a quick mention. So Brendan James is my 13th tackle out of Nebraska. Dylan Radunes out of North Dakota State is my 12th. Brady Christensen out of BYU is my 11th. James Hudson out of Cincinnati is my 10th. 9th is Liam Eichenberg out of Notre Dame. 8th, Alex Leatherwood out of Alabama. 7th, Spencer Brown out of Northern Iowa. 6th, Samuel Cosmi out of Texas. And then Tevin Jenkins and Elijah Vera Tucker, who again, I think in an ideal world is going to be better off at guard.
Okay. I have Jenkins as a tackle here.
Yeah.
Many names, many familiar names. Mm-hmm. Simon?
I have one pretty high. So I go with 10 to 3 here. Guess it's Jackson Carmen for me at 10, Alex Leatherwood 9, Jaden Mayfield from Michigan at 8. And then I got Liam Eichenberg at 7, Samuel Cosmi, same as you, at 6. And then I got Dylan Radunes at 5, which I really like, and Tevin Jenkins at 4.
Okay.
Love it.
No Walker Little so far.
Walker Little, yep.
It's 11 for me.
He's okay. He dropped out of your top 10. Is he in yours? In your top 3, Andre?
No, he is not. He is not in my top 13. Yeah.
Okay. No, I understand out here. I have him at my number 4.
I could make a case for it. I don't think you're insane.
Not yet.
Yeah, not yet, at least. Right. Let's talk it out.
Okay, I start off with Jackson Carmen at 10, Dylan Radunes at number 9. Is it Radunes or is it Radunes? I think it's Radunes, right?
It probably is Radunes. I don't even know anymore.
The German.
I've gone name blind these days. I really don't know.
Alex Leatherwood is my number 8, Liam Eichenberg my number 7, Tevin Jenkins my number 6, Sam Cosmi number 5, and then Walker Little. Let's talk it out.
Yeah, so, I mean, just in general, you like your higher upside pass protectors, Luca.
Yes.
Easy. No problem at all. So why is Spencer Brown not in this top 10? And a flaw in the plan, perchance.
True. Now you got me here, because you're right. He's maybe the one with the highest upside, Walker Little. And sure, what are the main points for you? Are those the injuries?
Yeah, the injuries, and just I don't love the way he plays. You know, he's big, but I don't see a guy who moves all that well. I think it's just getting really excited about upside. But there's not that much else, you know. I think he's kind of hidden by that system where you're seeing a lot of, heavy formations and stuff. And the other thing is, look, it's a loaded class. There are many years where Walker Little would be in my top 5. And Walker Little would have played a full season of games last year and really made a stronger case for him than he was able to this year. Because that hurts him, you know, but it comes down to I would rather roll the dice on the upside with a James Hudson out of Cincinnati who's new to the position. I still think has a lot of upside. Brady Christensen out of BYU who's shorter and smaller than Walker Little but is very athletic and in the right system would fit very well. Same goes with Radunes. I think Brendan James right now is a much more steady prospect out of Nebraska. I even think like Stone Forsythe or Jackson Carmen, other big high upside tackles are right there with Walker Little, you know. So it's just I see those traits, but I don't value them too much when compared to a lot of other guys in this class who have really high end traits. And maybe there's some prospect fatigue with me there, you know.
No. I get what you're saying, because I always trust your opinion on those guys, and I'll take into consideration getting back onto him. Maybe I'm too hyped on his regards. But who are some guys in those top 10 who are kind of special for me? It's maybe Alex Leatherwood. He's another one of those guys I've followed for a few years, and I definitely have prospect fatigue
100%.
With Alex Leatherwood. Because you've seen him so many times on Alabama. Yeah. You see him play incredibly well. You see him play some bad games. But I've seen him drop down and down over the last year, the boards. Maybe are we wrong? I don't know. I'm right now I'm at the same opinion. But is there a world in which Alex Leatherwood is a top-tier NFL tackle?
Yeah, absolutely. I think really like him, Spencer Brown, Walker Little, you know, without mentioning the top guys. Yeah, I think those are like the highest upside guys in this offensive tackle class. And, you know, when you're talking high upside on the offensive tackle class, you're talking about guys who might be getting the kind of contract Trent Williams just signed. So absolutely the elite of the elite. So, yeah, I think Leatherwood really gets into a fun part of scouting offensive linemen and particularly tackles, where it's like, how much do style points matter to you? Because he gets to, right, he's so big and athletic, he's often getting the job done.
Yeah.
But boy, does he look bad and sloppy doing it very often. And, you know, getting the job done off those raw traits is going to catch up to him very soon in his NFL career. And it's why I think I'm surprised we all have him as high as we do, because, you're right. He's a guy who's dropped a ton. Most analysts even have him as a guard right now.
Yeah, that would be my next question. Yeah. What do you think of that idea?
To me, a guy with his natural traits, you have to let him fail first at tackle before we move him inside.
He's wasted.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, his upside is just too much to put. And I think he's got the right attitude to be a right tackle. You know, he's got the great size. You know, I could see him become Trent Brown. I could see him become that other Brown out of Oklahoma who became a very good tackle for the Ravens, whose name I'm blanking on. I could see him also becoming Cam Robinson, not really working out, you know. But tackles... tackles with those kind of traits are worth taking a roll of the dice on, especially because you have a backup plan. You know, he doesn't work out at left tackle, you try him at right tackle. It doesn't work out at right tackle, he'll be just fine at guard with that size and athleticism. So,
and let's get into the top three. I think we all have the same, and I hope we have them all in the same order. Mm. Who are your top three, Andre?
Penei Sewell, Christian Darrisaw, Rashawn Slater.
Yeah. From back to front or from front to
That's
back?
That's one through three.
Okay. Yeah, I was
worried. No.
Simon?
Okay, I go from back to front then. Christian Darrisaw, Rashawn Slater, and Walker Little. Penei Sewell. I'm sorry.
I thought it was a joke.
The number one tackle in the Pac-12, Walker Little. Yeah.
No, okay. It's Penei Sewell for me all the way.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I have Sewell at one. I have Slater at two and Darrisaw at three. I guess we have to talk about why you have Slater, the Daniel Jeremiah top tackle of this year's class. Why do you have him at number three?
Slater, for me, easily the top interior offensive lineman, which I think, you know, is saying a lot with the kind of praise I just had for Creed Humphrey and even Elijah Vera Tucker and what have you. But Slater, to me, is hands down the best interior lineman. I just really worry about his length translating at the tackle spot. I think, you know, with all due respect to DJ, who certainly knows more, has forgotten more about the NFL draft than I will ever learn. I think there's some overrating in the scouting community going on with that Ohio State game, which was certainly impressive. But I'm sure you've both seen that game at least once. How many snaps did Slater really get Chase Young one-on-one? 10? 12? How many of those were in pass pro? 8? you know, like, come on.
I would argue that he got him one-on-one maybe on one or two occasions.
Right.
Not more.
Exactly. So now all of a sudden, what is a very good offensive lineman and guard is now a top 10 pick because he had five good snaps against Chase Young. Like, let's settle down for a second. He compares more to an Isaiah Wynn for me, you know, the former Georgia left tackle drafted by the Patriots at the end of round one.
Okay.
And, you know, they've stuck him at tackle where he's been okay. I don't think he's lived up to expectations. I think Slater could be at that level. I think Slater could be Brandon Scherff, who I was very high on. I think their size is very comparable. I think their athleticism is very comparable. They come out of the same conference. And you're getting a very good prospect. He carries a first round grade. Darisaw to me just has the higher upside. I actually like, you know, as good as Slater and Sewell are coming downhill and blocking on the move, boy, Darisaw will give them a run for their money. He moves so well. He plays with a nasty edge. He's been a valuable starter on that Virginia Tech line for multiple years. I wish we had the athletic testing, but at least he has the proper size and length. So Darisaw just barely gains out because I think he has the higher end traits. He has the more premium traits to allow him to stick at left tackle. And that carries a big value for him.
Do you think that run heavy Virginia Tech offense will hurt him in heavy pass sets in the NFL?
Certainly could. That's the problem with evaluating all these top offensive tackles, especially the guys from the Alabamas of the world, the Clemsons of the world, what have you, Florida. Let's face it, 8 out of 12 games, those kind of offensive tackles, they get to the fourth quarter, they're going to run 80% of the time, right? Because we're nursing a 10-point lead or more. And if you get drafted in the top 10, you're going to go to a really bad offense, and the exact opposite is happening.
Yeah.
All of a sudden,
great point.
The most fourth quarters, we're down 10. So everyone in the stadium knows we got to pass the ball. And everyone in the stadium now knows that the rookie tackle is ready to be picked on by your veteran edge rusher. And so, yeah, the early in a tackle's life, especially those top tackles drafted by really bad teams, there are some major sink or swim moments when you get late in games. And it's why, you know, I think like Andrew Thomas last year for the Giants struggled early in the season. And I think people were really unfair to him because, yeah, you're put in the absolute worst circumstances. And Georgia's a perfect example. Notre Dame's a perfect example. Those offenses run so much that then you get to the NFL, you got to do the exact opposite, and it can be a problem. So yeah, it concerns me to some extent, but I've watched him enough in pass pro, especially like that Miami game where I wish he was matched up against Jalen Phillips more, but Quincy Roche, who I really like, I thought he did a great job against him. I thought he carried himself really well all season when I study the pass pro reps. And luckily Virginia Tech, yes, run heavy, but they were forced to pass it a little more in the second half of games because they weren't always ahead. So we got to see Darisaw tested a bit more.
Okay, then let's get into number one, Penei Sewell. Mm. Is there... Oh, maybe let's start there. Do you think he's the best prospect, best non-quarterback prospect in this draft?
No.
Or is it Kyle Pitts?
It's Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts okay. And Trev are the only two guys who carry an elite grade for me.
Okay, no elite grade for Penei Sewell.
Nope.
I remember last year you only had an elite grade on Chase Young, right?
Yep, correct.
And I also remember us talking about that maybe Penei Sewell will be the only player getting, yep, apart from Lawrence, getting one this year. Yep. But that have changed.
Yes, it has. I think.
Was it the opt-out?
Not having another year of tape certainly hurts him. I'm sure if I got to see Penei Sewell in 2020 and just got to see his game progress another year, he would have done enough to justify an elite grade. And in fact, I think it's telling that in a class full of like really extraordinary talent, even Ja'Marr Chase doesn't qualify for an elite grade because I've only seen one season of production. You know, It's hard evaluating guys based off sophomore tape. Junior tape is usually where you're going to see that big jump in how a guy plays. So I think it's really encouraging how dominant and flawless Penei Sewell was in his first 2 years in college. But there are times when he looked like a sophomore. There are times where he gets a little sloppy, where he can get beat. And I will admit, the length, the 33-inch arms do concern me as well.
But is there... For me, it's like he was so dominant as a 19-year-old and as a freshman.
Yeah.
And the sky is the limit, I think, slogan that fits him perfectly. Because I think he has a lower floor, but I think he has an as high of a ceiling like maybe Lawrence has on his respective position.
Yeah, I tend to agree. But like,
doesn't sound like it.
As pure ceiling goes, man, we've seen some really high ceiling offensive tackles. Like, I don't know, but it's hard to say Tristan Wirfs didn't have a higher ceiling. Now, Penei Sewell way more dominant in college, way higher floor, but Tristan Wirfs, to me, higher ceiling. Mekhi Becton, to me, higher ceiling. You know what I mean? So I guess there is some concern that at like under 6'5 and at 330 pounds with under 34-inch arms that Sewell has maxed out his physique. There is no more, not a millimeter more to grow that frame. And there's a lot of tackles that's not, you know, Spencer Brown, for example. We can mold that body for another 10 years. Sewell, I think, is maxed out. Really athletic. But the other thing is when you rely on your athleticism so much, I worry, is that maxed out a bit too? Like, is this like buying a brand new car and the second we drive it off the lot, it's depreciating value a little bit? So I'm not trying to rain on Penei Sewell's parade. He's so compact, so like clean, balance is insane with him. And then when he comes downhill, when he's the aggressor, forget it. He's insane. But, you know, he just has to do everything right to really be who we think he can be. And I think that's asking a lot in a position where you really get tested.
Yeah, like we said at the beginning, I think he'll have his troubles, but because of opting out this year, and the transition to the NFL. But I'm not as worried about him as maybe on a Jamar Chase, where I think the opt out year will hurt him even more.
Yeah, it's uncharted territory. We're really gonna find out.
Yeah, sure. Then, Sam, do you have any more takes to Penei Sewell?
Yes, actually have a question. I have a question. I asked a few people the last days, especially a listener and a competitor in our fantasy league right before our podcast here. And the question is, should the Bengals draft Penei Sewell? And I'm not quite sure if you think that's right, because I might think you would go Kyle Pitts here because how you ranked him.
I was just talking with a Bengals fan about this exact thing very recently. He was asking me about the Chase Sewell debate, and I was telling him, well, I think you have it wrong. I think it's Pitts who needs to be that pick.
Okay.
That said, though, the way that team is structured, maybe I would just go Sewell. You know, there's so few true tackle options in this class. There's so many wide receivers. They already have a bunch of wide receivers. I don't know. Sometimes it's better to just be responsible, build that, you know, make sure that building block for your franchise is at a premium position and keep it moving and sacrifice the fact that Jamar Chase is there. I can tell you that Pitts has an elite grade. He's ranked second. Jamar Chase has a top 10 grade. He's ranked third. And Penei Sewell has a top 10 grade and is ranked sixth. So my rankings would tell you another thing. But given the positional value and kind of the strengths of this draft, how many wide receivers I can find versus how many like pure left tackles I can find, I might just go Sewell. But if I was the GM, yeah, I'd have a really hard time passing on Kyle Pitts. I love Kyle Pitts, guys.
I think I said just 3 weeks ago, if Joe Burrow came to me as a Bengals GM and told me I have to get Jamar Chase because of their link and their pass together, I would sit him down in the film room and let him watch all of them hits he took last year, including his final injury, which cost him the season, and then I will draft Penny Sewell.
that's
my take.
Doesn't sound like a bad plan to me.
The Bengals situation. Have you heard of Greg Island?
Greg Island? No, I haven't.
I think it was last session when we recorded. We had a look around and looked at arm length, and his wingspan is 88 inches.
Oh my god.
He has the biggest arms ever. I thought maybe you've heard of him. He is from Mississippi State. Dan Brugler has him as a non-drafted prospect. But I looked at it and I was like, how is that possible? I think the second closest is Dante Smith from East Carolina. He has 85-inch wingspan.
Big boy.
But 88 is insane.
It is nuts. him and Dan Moore, Dante Smith and Dan Moore are really the big guys. You got to focus on the big guys this year, too. That is insane. Do you know what his arms are? Over 36 inches, I assume. Do you know if they're over 37?
His arms are 36 and a half.
Wow.
With 10 and a half inch hands.
That's amazing.
There are small hands for his arms.
That's incredible.
10 and a half is not small, but in comparison.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. 30. I'd never heard of 36 inch arms in the NFL, at least. Yeah, that's.
I think Leonard Coleman from Massachusetts has 35 and a half. But yeah, that's it. Dante Smith, like I said.
That's incredible.
He was kind of standout, and I thought maybe you'd know him. But that's also great transition to your sleepers. Mm. Not just considering those position groups we focused on. Who are some guys maybe people don't have in mind who will have an immediate impact, maybe explode, are some great sleepers we should have a look on?
I think James Wiggins is a guy out of Cincinnati, safety, really played his best football back in 2018, then tested really well recently. But he's a guy who, if injuries weren't a concern, I would say high floor, high ceiling. Obviously, injuries are a concern, but he has me very, very intrigued. I like him a lot. I like Ellerson Smith out of Northern Iowa. Just like I like Spencer Brown, kind of the small school guys are really intriguing. I think a guy that's not getting talked about at all, Adetokunbo Ogdonije, the Notre Dame edge rusher who was at the Senior Bowl. He's just been like great every step of his career and I think has a pretty noticeable upside, and yet barely anyone is talking about him. I think, you know, locally, I always try to give you guys a local prospect, Warren Jackson out of Colorado State, a guy who really put it on Alabama a couple years ago and has all the receiving skill in the world, a guy who, you know, anyone at that program would have told you a couple years ago that he was going to be a better NFL prospect than Preston Smith, of course, or Preston Williams, I'm sorry. Preston Williams, of course, went undrafted, but then has carved out a very nice role for himself there with the Miami Dolphins. So I think Warren Jackson is absolutely a name you got to keep.
He's 6'5".
Yeah, he's massive.
Damn.
He's massive.
But he's 185?
Very skinny.
That's kind of skinny.
Kinda skinny. Yeah. him and TJ Vasher out of Texas Tech, another name that's really gotten lost in the shuffle. I think are two of the best like contested ball artists I've truly ever watched. It's pretty amazing. As I mentioned, I really like Jared Patterson. you know, I gave out the Brady White out of Memphis as kind of a sleeper pick that I have at quarterback. I will tell you, this is a name you've certainly heard of before. Much like Creed Humphrey, I'm really high on. I think the other guy that I'm highest above probably like 90% of the rest of like draft Twitter and draft media is Eric Stokes, the cornerback out of Georgia. I think.
Yeah, we talked about him in our safety episode. Where did you have him, Simon? Do you have your?
I have him at nine, number nine cornerback. For me.
Yeah. See, he's cornerback. He's my third cornerback. Damn. Yeah, so I'm really high.
Yeah, he only was an honorable mention for me. I have him out of my top 10.
And I could see him becoming, you know, maybe not Stephon Gilmore, but that next tier of cornerback. I think he'll make, like, you know, Ronald Darby is a guy who's like a very average cornerback, but that's made tons of money every year. He's making $10 million or more. The Broncos just signed him. I think Eric Stokes is going to be like a better version of that. Like, I think he'll be like a $13 million player within 5 years.
Okay. Yeah. Nice. I hope everyone took notes. I did, because that's why we love having you on. Get those guys we are missing when we're talking about our top 10 picks or our top 10 in those position groups.
Yeah.
I would say we finish it off here. Thank you so much for keeping that tradition alive, Andre.
Absolutely.
It was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, and check out thedmvr.com. Any Broncos listeners out there, things really
heating
up.
Not only Broncos, if you need another draft guide or another big board and new perspective apart from those everyone uses, get the big board of Andre Simon, at least for a month.
Yes, I appreciate it. It's worth it. Yeah, exactly. The month subscription, very reasonable. Yeah. So check that out. Check out our videos, YouTube channel, all that kind of fun stuff.
I'm already excited about day two and day three of the draft when I start spamming you with get your takes on those guys that we will draft in round 4 to 7.
Can't wait. It's going to be glorious.
Of course. Okay, then have a great day.
Thank you, guys.
And,
you too.
Goodbye.
Thanks. Bye.